The views and opinions expressed in the following paid program do not necessarily represent those of staff, management, or advertisers with WBIG Radio.
Your radio dial is locked. On the Gopher's Den Lawn and Gardening Show. Go from loafing around in the garden to being a master of your yard splendor.
Hey, Mr. Gopher.
In the next half hour, you'll get the confidence you need to tackle those weekend projects with ease. You'll get information about proper methodology and the best materials available at a price you can afford. The Gopher's Den Lawn and Gardening Show is brought to you in part by 844-DIRT. 844-DIRT, improved earth products. And now it's time for another show straight from the Gopher's Den.
Welcome to the Gopher's Den Landscape and Garden Show. Today, Mike and I are going to give you the dirt on compost, what it is, how it works, and how to properly set up a compost pile. Now, not only is compost an additive for your garden, but it's a step you can take to save the environment, turning an otherwise wasted material into a valuable soil amendment.
Boy, I like the sound of that, Zach. Anytime we can take a waste material and save it from going to the landfill and turn that into something valuable, that's something I'm really interested in.
Mm-hmm.
And can't you just take all the stuff and stick it in a pile and wait for it to decompose?
Yeah, you know, to some extent you are right, Mike. That is a form of composting. Composting really occurs from the breakdown of the material. The most common instance people may recognize is the forest floor. That soft, fluffy, light black stuff on the surface of the forest floor is from years of decay, which results in just a real well-composted material.
Yeah, soft, fluffy, black stuff on the forest floor. Well, I'm sure, like me, lots of our listeners don't have a forest floor in their backyard or years to achieve this composting. So, but what we're talking about is something a bit more advanced. Composting techniques that are designed to expedite the process and not just make it faster, but make it better, Zach. Is that what we're going to talk about?
Exactly. We're going to tell you the difference between active and passive composting. Passive composting is kind of like what Mike alluded to earlier, just throwing everything into a pile and letting it compost away on its own.
Yeah, and there, you know, in some cases where people aren't really interested in, you know, doing the active part of that, that will break down over time. But it's certainly not what we're after here. We're after this active composting process, which is almost like a gourmet composting, where we really get control of the process to produce a very high-quality material from our waste.
That's right, Mike. With active composting, you can obtain a usable compost in as little as 4 to 6 weeks versus the passive composting, which can take years and years just to break down all that material.
Yeah, and, you know, 4 to 6 weeks, it doesn't seem like a very long time, Zach. That's pretty good.
Exactly. Through the summer, you can have easily three different compost piles going and have a usable product all throughout the summer.
But I'm sure we're going to need a few things to start this project, and I'm sure it's going to require a little bit of work, huh?
Always, always. Anytime you get the word active, you're going to have to do some work. One of the things you'll need is a pitchfork, and you're going to use this to turn the pile to incorporate some oxygen into the pile. Another thing you might need is a temperature probe. The temperature of the pile is very important. You want to make sure the temperatures fall into the right range to provide the best atmosphere to this decomposition to happen.
Yeah, that's very important, and we can pick up these pitchforks and probes. We can get these materials at our resource partners. If you check out our website, 844dirt.com, click on a resource partner near you and click and save. We will need some of these tools to do this.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, there are other things that you need to do, take into consideration. You're going to have to properly layer the pile. You're going to have to incorporate some water into the pile at certain times. And there's just a little more about active composting that you need to understand.
Yeah, sure, Zach. But I guess you're going to tell us all about active composting. I'm sure you are, Mr. Biology Boy.
Well, Mike, I'm not an expert, but temperature is directly proportional to the biological activity within the composting system.
Oh,
now,
boy.
As the
Here
metabolic
we go
rate
again.
Of the microbes accelerates, the temperature within the system increases. Now, conversely, as the metabolic rate of the microbes decreases, the system temperature decreases. Now, maintaining a temperature of 130 degrees or more for 3 to 4 days will really favor the destruction of weed seeds, fly larvae, and different plant pathogens that could be causing problems.
Wow, Zach, that was almost a mental overload of information. So let me try to put this in a, you know, a bit more simple terms. It's sort of like Goldilocks. You know, Not too hot, not too cold, just right.
Well, Mike, in my field, I would call that a gross oversimplification of the process, but yeah, you can consider it like the Goldilocks, because at temperatures of 155 degrees Fahrenheit, organic matter will decompose about twice as fast as it would at 130 degrees Fahrenheit. Now, temperatures above 155 degrees Fahrenheit may actually result in the destruction of certain microbes that really help the decomposition process.
So this is where we talked about, you know, the controlling and monitoring the temperatures. This is where it becomes a very fine balance, and so that's very important. Is that a safe characterization, a fine balance here?
Yes, that's right. But there are other things, such as moisture content, oxygen availability, and microbial activity that all influence the temperature. Now, when the pile temperature is increasing, it's operating at its optimum performance, and you should just leave it alone. But as the temperature peaks, it'll begin to decrease. Then that pile should be turned to incorporate some oxygen into that compost. Now, subsequently, the pile should respond to this turning and incorporation of oxygen and reheat. Now, after you turn the process several times and it does fail to reheat, this indicates that that composting material is biologically stable and ready to use.
Well, Zach, that's certainly a lot of information, but that's a really important point to this whole process is, you know, when you start this, this material generates lots of heat, and so we're really consumed with monitoring that heat and keeping it hot and keeping it turned, which we'll talk about more in the second segment. But what's so interesting about that is when the process is done, it doesn't generate heat anymore, and then that's pretty much our...
Exactly. It just kind of stops.
It stops, and now it's ready.
Now, when I started doing my compost pile early this spring, I've already got some usable compost at the bottom. That's where a pitchfork is really handy. As you turn the pile, the small, light, flat, fluffy black stuff, which is decomposed material, actually falls to the bottom. That's your usable material. That's what you want. And after, let's see, several months already, I've gotten two good, you know, wheelbarrow fulls of compost off of just yard waste, stuff that I'd have to bag up and pay to get rid of.
That's amazing. And, you know, to get rid of that material is quite expensive. And it's labor intense anyways. So we might as well take an active stance against this and use this for our benefit.
Exactly. Not only our benefit, but for the benefit of the environment in general, Mike. That's what we're out for.
Absolutely. Well, I just can't believe we've said so much about this, so we're going to have to take a break. But you know what? Check out our website, 844dirt.com. Check out our resource partners. We'll be right back.
Trying to get your lawn and garden looking better? Ace Hardware has absolutely everything you need to get your job done right. Whether you're tackling a big project or a little one, we've got everything from fertilizers to sprinklers, garden tools, and more. And most importantly, helpful people that understand it all. We'll help you get it done right. Ace, the helpful place.
Visit DG Ace Hardware, the helpful place in St. Charles on Main Street and in Aurora on New York Street.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware folks.
You're listening to the Gopher's Den Landscape and Garden Show, brought to you by 844 Dirt. If you have any questions or tips, or would like to be a guest expert on the show, send us an email at thegophersden@844dirt.com. That's thegophersden@844dirt.com. If we use your question on the air, we'll send you a free Gopher's Den t-shirt, courtesy of the Gopher's Den. Well, let's get back to the den with the lovable little rodent himself.
844 Dirt is one of the largest residential mulch suppliers in the Fox Valley area, housing everything from Northwoods Mulch of Wisconsin to Alabama Bark Mulch from the Smoky Mountain region. 844 Dirt is the exclusive provider of the finest mulches found throughout the United States. 844 Dirt also carries the finest organic weed-free screened mushroom compost available. Our courteous, uniformed drivers deliver all these products right to your home. To see a full selection of the products we carry and to utilize our handy materials calculator, head to our website at 844dirt.com.
That grass won't fertilize itself. Of course, neither will a radio program. But we can sure give you some tips that'll help you do it right. Here's some more help straight from the Gopher's Den.
Welcome back to the Gopher's Den Landscape and Garden Show. Mike and I just got done talking about how a compost pile works, including the difference between active and passive composting.
Yeah, Zach, all that talk about composting and how it works and what do we do. Boy, I'm really getting excited. I want to actually do something here. So can we talk about actually constructing and maintaining a compost pile?
Yeah, Mike, because organizing the pile properly will really help aid in the decomposition process.
Absolutely. It's really important to know what you can include and what you can't use to start this composting pile. That's really important.
Exactly. Some things that you can use are things like leaves, grass clippings, branches from your yard. You should either chop these or shred these.
Yeah, a good rule of thumb, Zach, is on the branches, is anything bigger than a thumb is too big.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, because the larger the particle size, it's just going to take a lot longer for it to break down.
It is, yeah. You're trying to break down large material like that. It's just a very long process. So anything larger than your thumb is too big for this compost pile.
Mm-hmm. You could also compost things like weeds, sawdust, corn stalks, different livestock manures. And by livestock manures, we say anything that's non-domesticated in your house. You could use goats, pigs, horses, cows. All that will really help to aid in your compost pile. You can also use fruit and vegetable scraps from your kitchen, along with eggshells and coffee grounds. And when you're composting coffee grounds, don't be afraid. Throw the whole filter and everything in there. It'll break down with no problem.
Yeah, filter's really fine, so it'll just decompose right with the rest of the material.
Mm-hmm. Now, you want to separate these things into two piles, greens and browns, based on color. We'll tell you why a little later, but that's a very important process.
Yeah, and you know what's kind of interesting, Zach, is first of all, eggshells are kind of white, and so that would be considered neutral. You mm-hmm. can either put those in with the green or the brown. And coffee grounds is one of the exceptions too. One of the exceptions with coffee grounds is that coffee grounds is usually brown,
mm-hmm.
but that actually counts as a green. And why is that, Zach?
Well, it's because coffee grounds contain just vast amounts of nitrogen. And nitrogen is what's in most of the green material, such as your grass clippings and your weeds and such. And that's really going to help your compost. Okay. But there are some things that you need to avoid putting in your compost pile. For instance, any part of the walnut tree. Walnut trees contain a substance called hydrojugulone. Hydrojugulone, Mike. What it does is it actually inhibits the growth of plants around it. This gives the walnut tree an advantage by using more nutrients by limiting the amount of nutrients that the other plants can have.
Wow, Zach, only you would know that.
Yeah, and you don't want to include that in your pile because it could be totally counterproductive to what we're doing.
We don't want to do that.
Exactly. You also don't want to put ash from a fireplace in there. That can really raise the pH to some undesirable levels, and it's just not a good thing to do.
Yeah. Bonfire ash is, very high in alkaline after that burnt off carbon, correct?
Did you say bonfire or bonfire?
You say bonfire, I say bonfire. What's the difference?
We'll call it a fire pit.
Okay, let's call it a fire pit.
Okay. You also don't want to include dairy products, meat, or bones, because these can attract rodents, insects, and other vectors that can just be nasty to have around. And we're not trying to cause any problems with the neighbors.
Yeah, we're creating an efficient compost pile, not a rat's nest or some haven for insects or bugs. We want a good compost pile here.
Also avoid diseased plants, pet waste, and anything that's been treated with pesticides.
Yeah, sometimes pesticides have a pretty long shelf life, and that's not something we want to add to our compost.
Yeah, along with pet waste, these can contain just diseases that are real toxic to humans, okay? Any domesticated animal you do not want to use, dogs, cats, rabbits, any of that, you got to avoid.
Also, no human waste at all either.
No human waste. That's exactly right, Mike. Thanks for bringing that up.
I'm always good for that one, Zach. Even if we don't consider them domesticated, no human waste.
No human waste. Okay, now that you got these two piles, you got your greens that are high in nitrogen and you got your browns that are high in carbon, start layering your pile into 3-inch layers with the coarsest browns first. Now, these will be your largest sticks and branches, and you want to follow that with a 3-inch layer of greens. Top that layer of greens with some mushroom compost to speed up the process, or just use another layer of browns. Now, you want to alternate these until the pile is roughly 3.5 feet tall.
Yeah, so it's really simple. You start out with the larger material, and it's brown, green, until you achieve approximately 3.5 foot tall. There's your compost pile.
Mm-hmm. With that, you'll achieve the proper ratio of 1/3 parts green to 2/3 parts brown. That's really going to help your productivity. Now, after you have your pile constructed, wet it thoroughly with a hose. This will help the pile to heat properly. After that, I just want you to walk away. Walk away until next Sunday and forget about your composting pile altogether. Now, when you come back in a week, turn that pile thoroughly with a pitchfork.
Yeah, now we're going to want to rotate that pile. After it sits a week, it starts building up some heat and starts to break down. Now we're going to rotate that pile. And sometimes this is a good time for us to kind of monitor how that pile is starting to break down. Is it really dry inside? Well, then maybe we can add a little bit more moisture via water. Does it look like it's really starting to break down? These are some really good indications as we're rotating the pile. We're just not flipping it over. We're kind of inspecting this to see how this process is working for us.
Mm-hmm. And if there's any types of odors or anything, that means there's a problem with your composting pile.
The other thing, too, is once we've done this layering, greens and browns, this composting pile is done. As we turn it over, we don't have to relayer or make sure the layers stay together. Now it's just a compost pile. It's a big heap. We just keep it turned over. One of the other things that we need to make sure we don't want to add to the compost pile.
That's right.
So
right.
Once we have this 3.5 foot layered pile and we start turning it, we don't want to just add stuff. If you have more material, stockpile it or make another pile.
Mm-hmm. Now, after several weeks, you're going to want to check the temperature of this pile and use a good probe and everything to find out the exact temperature of the inside of the pile. Once that pile stops heating, you're going to have a good product that would have otherwise went to a landfill, and now you can use it as a soil amendment.
Yeah, it's kind of like a cake when you take it out of the oven. When it's when you turn the heat off, it's done. So when this thing stops producing heat, it's pretty much done.
Exactly, Mike.
So I like that.
Now that's just a little of the dirt on composting. And if you have any questions or tips, send them to us at 844dirt.com.
And don't forget to check out the website, 844dirt.com, to get all the gear you need to complete your project.
Trying to get your lawn and garden looking better? Ace Hardware has absolutely everything you need to get your job done right. Whether you're tackling a big project or a little one, we've got everything from fertilizers to sprinklers, garden tools, and more. And most importantly, helpful people that understand it all. We'll help you get it done right. Ace, the helpful place.
Visit Ace, the helpful place, in Batavia on Wilson Street and Geneva on Main Street.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
You're listening to the Gopher's Den Landscape and Garden Show, brought to you by 844-DIRT. If you have any questions or tips, or would like to be a guest expert on the show, send us an email at thegophersden@844dirt.com. That's thegophersden@844dirt.com. If we use your question on the air, we'll send you a free Gopher's Den t-shirt, courtesy of the Gopher's Den. Well, let's get back to the den with the lovable little rodent himself. Do you care for a lawn?
844-DIRT.
Tend to a garden?
844-DIRT.
Nurture plants?
844-DIRT.
With high-quality earth products such as topsoil, compost, mulch, and more, 844-DIRT can help you with your most earthly prospect.
844-DIRT can also accommodate small deliveries right to your home, staffed with courteous, uniformed drivers.
844-DIRT.
Online, 844DIRT.com provides a full product inventory as well as a materials calculator so you'll see what you're getting and how much you will need.
Proudly serving the Fox Valley area with high-quality improved earth products since 1990. 844-DIRT is a name you can trust.
Curb appeal is everything, and without the proper know-how, your home won't have any. Stay with us for more great ideas and unique tips on the Gopher's Den Lawn and Gardening Show.
Welcome back to the Gopher's Den Lawn and Landscape Show. Now is the part of our show where we get to answer some of the questions that you sent to us at thegophersden@844dirt.com. Our first question comes from Pete in Yorkville. Pete writes, I live in an open area, and the wind coming across my fields is horrendous. What do you suggest I do? Well, Pete, my suggestion would be to plant a row of evergreens in a staggered row to screen these prevailing winds from getting near your house. Now, take note that a windbreak protects an area 10 times its height, so a stand of 5-foot-tall trees will reduce the wind up to 50 feet away.
Yeah, Zach, this is a really common technique to avoid wind. And even some unwanted lights from if you're near a road. Sometimes the cars just shine the lights.
Yeah,
into
lights
the house.
And noise even.
Lights, noise. This is a great barrier. This has been a really common technique among landscapers and homeowners for years. And the other thing is too, it's possible to even incorporate them in a berm. Mm-hmm. I've seen people build a small berm area and then plant the evergreens on top of the berm also.
Exactly. So if you planted a 5-foot-tall evergreen on top of a 3-foot-tall berm.
Oh gosh, that gives you lots of.
You have 80 feet away that you're protecting the wind from.
Yeah. And also, doesn't this help? This helps with blowing snow and some bad weather, too, doesn't it?
Oh, definitely. A stand of evergreen trees will actually make the snow pile up closer to them. whereas a pile of row of deciduous trees or bushes would actually bring the drift farther to you, closer to your house.
Yeah, closer to the home. And if you can avoid that, you definitely want to keep the snow and the weather away from the house.
Mm-hmm. So just remember that when you plant these trees, you can plant them fairly far away. You don't want to plant these right up next to your house for a wind block. You actually want to plant them, take into consideration they will grow, and plant them a good distance away.
Yeah, and also, you definitely, evergreens are a very durable tree. One of the other tips, too, is, you know, buy them locally. That's one of the golden rules when you're buying nursery stock or small trees and stuff like that. Is buy these in the environment that they're growing now, so they're gonna last. But yeah, that's great advice, Zach.
All right. Well, Pete, start looking for your T-shirt in the mail, and we will get that out to you first thing Monday morning. Now, here's a little question I heard from my neighbor the other day, Mike. And Todd, if you're listening, yes, this is you. Todd asked that if wood mulch would attract carpenter ants towards his house. Now, I've heard of this before. This is like the urban legend of the landscaper industry.
Yeah, if we put some type of wood mulch in our house, it's going to attract carpenter ants. Yeah, that's furthest thing from the truth.
Exactly. The first thing you need to know is that a nice thick layer of shredded bark mulch around your house is not going to be like a banquet spread out for the pleasure and convenience of carpenter ants. Carpenter ants don't even eat wood. Now, that's a simple fact that surprises a lot of people.
Yeah, yeah. That when I found that out, I'm like, well, why do they, why do they say they devour your house? You know, I mean, they don't even eat wood.
Yeah, well, although they don't eat it, they do bore through any kind of solid wood, and they do so for the purpose of building a nest.
Yes, they do.
Now, they live in that nest and dead trees, which can be, rotting logs, stumps, telephone pole, your porch.
Or your house, yeah.
Or your house, yeah. But it's really not the mulch that attracts them. As far as removal, location of the nest is very important. Carpenter ants can travel 200 yards away from their main nest. And Todd, that nest is in your tree out front in the parkway. So take care of that, okay?
Yeah, those ants are amazing too, Zach. Well, first of all, they don't distinguish between a tree log and the beam of your house. So, they're not making any distinctions there, but it's unbelievable to see those ants, the way they just kind of march like a small army. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. Have you seen that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I have a path crossing my street from Todd's house directly towards my front porch. And I've tried all different kinds of eradication methods. And carpenter ants, they're very tough to get rid of.
It's like the A-team.
Yeah, yeah. I love it when a plan comes together.
What else we got, Zach? We're going to give this guy a T-shirt, even though he's your neighbor?
Yeah, I'll give him a T-shirt. All right. I'll bring one home for you, Todd. Thanks a lot for that question.
We'll save some postage.
We'll save some postage. All right. Well, Mr. Gopher is moving dirt piles today, but in his stead, I will pass on his message to you.
Yeah, and I'm always amazed by Mr. Gopher, the wisdom and intelligence and experience that he passes on to us is just absolutely amazing. It's he's my hero.
It is.
If a rodent can be a hero, he's my hero.
Well, there was Mighty Mouse.
Yes, you're right. There was Mighty Mouse.
There was Mighty Mouse. Now there's Mr. Gopher. But let's hear it straight from the gopher himself.
Wow, why is Mr. Gopher mad at me? What did I do? Why is he so hostile to me? Where'd this hostility come from?
You know, Mike, I think it was that comment we had the other day about the Labrador Retriever. They don't take kindly to that. You got to remember, he's a rodent.
Yeah, that's
you know?
True.
We'll talk to him about that.
Okay, thanks.
What Mr. Gopher said, and I'll interpret this since Mike really has a hard enough time with English, a healthy front lawn has the same cooling effect as an 8.5-ton air conditioning compressor. Now, this is caused because when the plants transpire, which means to evaporate water through the leaf surface to cool themselves, they cool the immediate area right around them. Now, about half of the heat energy directed toward the turf area is eliminated by transpiration. Now, when the temperature of the sidewalk is near 100 degrees Fahrenheit, the temperature of the adjacent turf remains near 75, and that's a drastic cooling effect. That's 25 degrees.
That's huge.
So in the middle of summer, it really does pay to have a thick, luscious, healthy lawn because you're not only cooling yourself, but hey, you're providing a good house for a gopher.
Yeah, one more reason to have an awesome lawn. Is there enough reasons?
There's
never enough reasons
there's
to
never
have an
enough
awesome
reasons.
Lawn.
Yeah.
Well, that's certainly a great tip, Zach, and we're coming up to the end of the show here, so we just want to say, hey, just check out our website, 844dirt.com. If you need any of the improved earth products, you can check out our website. If you need some of the tools that we've talked about during the show, you can click on our resource partners and save. If you have any questions or tips, email us at thegophersden@844dirt.com. And we just want to thank you for listening. It's our privilege to pass on this information to you. So thanks for spending your Saturday with us.
And I just wanted to let you know that we picked up one more listener this last month, and that was my little boy, Maximus. And I hope that he's listening right now, and we'll get him a Gopher's Den t-shirt too, and that one's on the house.
A mini size.
Mini.
Have a good weekend. Happy gardening.